The biggest problems we're facing is getting supply, material and people in there and being able to support staff that go in. Because essentially what's happened is you've got a ground zero situation up there and you're having to build a logistical operation from scratch. Now, the UN already has people in there. They've started the process. They're starting the coordination, but it is very early days. And by the middle of next week, we'll have in place sophisticated satellite-based communication. We will have self-contained camps for up to 90 or 100 people, and that will be increased. So what we're having at the moment is log jams because we don't have that sort of coordination and we don't have that prioritization of what is exactly needed. And I'll give you an example of how that's affecting it. In Bandar Aceh, the center of the disaster, the supply is just blocking up the airport. We can't get enough food and medical equipment in there because the system itself is just overloaded. The capacity is beyond it. So that needs to be prioritized, and there needs to be other airports opened up urgently.
Now, besides opening up the airports, do you need more vehicles to get the supplies out?
Yes, there's a shortage of vehicles in Maidan. Now, Maidan is a city to the south of the disaster area and is becoming a focal point for logistics and supply. Desperately need more vehicles, more trucks there. Now, then what happens is because there's no fuel in Bandar Aceh, they actually have to have enough fuel to get back. And because there is a complete lack of food in Aceh and people have been without food for the past 3 or 4 days, we're getting reports in now of some social unrest. We have heard reports that vehicles have been held up on the only road that takes you from Maidan into Bandar Aceh. So there are issues of security which are beginning to become apparent as well.
Do you know whether operations within the country have switched from recovering the bodies to helping those who survived the tsunami and earthquake?
It's both. What's happening in Bandar Aceh is like a Dante's hell on earth. You have a desperate process of having to dispose and bury the bodies, many of them unidentified. I've seen reports, I've been told, you know, of families who have put photographs on walls and trying to identify where these people are. We have people here in Jakarta, for example, who are getting cell phone photographs out, desperately trying to locate their loved ones. Indeed, one of the people we spoke to today had lost her entire family in Bandar Aceh, and it was only because she's a student here. We've had colleagues of ours, UNICEF has colleagues of ours who worked in the Ministry of Health in Bandar Aceh who have died. The situation with the government authority up there is catastrophic. I mean, it's ceased to function. And you know, I'll just read to you, if you don't mind, just one report. This is a report of a meeting today that we held with the Ministry of Health, and it just simply says, MOH, section dealing with communicable disease in Aceh has lost 19 of its 25 staff. The health department, which deals with another area of its operation, has lost 70 staff. So we have the very people who normally you would rely on to be able to provide these services to the public have disappeared. They're dead.
As a result, have you heard of many reports of disease outbreaks?
No reports of disease outbreaks as of the moment. There's 50 government of Indonesia surveillance people up there, and we have to date heard nothing of that. I mean, there are rumours that spread around here from time to time, but nothing has been confirmed at all.
Mr. Budd, are you able to give those living outside of Indonesia who are worrying about their relatives any indication of when more information might be available?
Well, people who have relatives in Aceh just want to know whether they're alive or not, and there is no easy answer to being able to answer that question. I'm sorry, it just is not. It's impossible. The international aid agencies at the moment are utterly focused on trying to keep as many people living alive, and with all the log jams, with all the issues of trying to get food and medical supplies to the people who are without home. That's over 500,000. That's where we're focused on. And we can only just hope that, you know, among those people who are living in the streets and living in temporary camps, that the people whose loved ones are there might be among them.
What is the next step for UNICEF at this stage?
Our next step is to get up the emergency health equipment, which has arrived here in Jakarta. We've got enough emergency health kits for 200,000 people. We've got to get them up to the people who need them. That's our major priority. We've got people up there trying to get in to determine just how we can distribute those to the people. So that's our number one priority. Our second priority is to establish a number of critical responses over the next week or so, and that will be to do with child protection issues such as trying to identify separated children and orphans and to care for those children and to get them reunited with their parents. We're going to try and get immunisation programs up and running as fast as possible, and also to deal with the water and sanitation problems such as water purification tablets, such as chlorine, all those kits that are needed urgently to ensure that clean water can be provided through sending up bottled water from here. They are the key issues that we're facing over the next week.